There's a special rite of passage known as the first year of teaching. Sometimes that feels like 10 months of hazing. The latest Next to Normal Story Slam is about getting schooled. Stories about education in the classroom and out. Cindy Brown has spent her life in and around classrooms and theaters, most recently in the theater ed department at ISU.
I am a teacher. I have always been and have always wanted to be a teacher. Well, there was that 10 minutes when I thought I wanted to be a nurse, but then I met chemistry and I said bye. But I actually began my career as a teacher when I was 5 in my Aunt Mabel's chicken coop on her farm in North Dakota. Now, this chicken coop was like no other. She had cleaned it out, by the way. But in it were the remnants of a one-room schoolhouse that had closed about a quarter of a mile from her farm, and she had managed to salvage so many of the things that were part of the life of that school. So there were the student desks with the little inkwells. There was the teacher's desk, complete with the bell. There was a blackboard with chalk I could write on the board, right? There were maps, probably from about 1902, but you could pull them down and up and up and down. And there were workbooks and worksheets and textbooks. And I was in heaven. Now, I've kind of puzzled over this for a while. How did I come at the age of 5 to have this wonderful, incredible fascination with education? Well, I think a lot of it had to do with my family. My father, who I loved and adored, he was my sun, my moon, everything. He was a coach, he was a teacher, he was a principal. Two of my mothers, that's another story, two of my mothers were teachers, right? Two of them were teachers. One of my aunts had taught in a one-room school. My grandmother had taught first grade since time immemorial. You get the picture. It was in my DNA, right? It was in my blood. In spite of the fact that I was adopted, I was meant to be a teacher, right? So I began to prepare. As a young person in junior high and high school, I did what many young educators maybe thought they should do. I watched and listened to and read Up the Down Staircase. I watched and read and listened to Sir with Love, Goodbye, Mr. Chips. And of course, Annie Sullivan of The Miracle Worker was my biggest hero, right? My biggest hero. I mean, I could see that teaching was a challenge. I mean, you could see that. You watch those, you read those, you see, oh, there were some really rough times there. But the kids, right? At the end of the whole thing, the kids always just loved you, right? They just loved you. So I went off to college. By the time I was a junior, I transferred to North Dakota State University in Fargo, North Dakota. And I didn't take any education classes until my junior year. My junior year, I took 3 education courses. I got a C in all 3. That was a little disillusioning at that point in time. I said, okay, well, listen, I still have 3 quarters. We're on the quarter system. I still have 3 quarters before I student teach. So senior year, fall, I'm fresh. I'll take another ed course. It's required. I got another C, right? So now I begin to say, They were still going to let me go through, right? And that was okay. But I said, I'm supposed to be getting better grades in this, right? I'm supposed to. Anyway, so I took the capstone course, a course in measurements and so forth and evaluation. And I got an A, right? I marched on to student teaching. I got an A. So I went, oh, A, C, A, C, A, C. Oh, to hell with the grades. I'm going to be a teacher, right? So in 1974, my husband, Dean, was accepted into the school psych program at Morehead State University in Morehead. So we went there. I needed a job. He was in grad school. I needed a job. I applied for a job in Borup, which is a tiny, tiny town on the western edge of Minnesota. I sent in, of course, all my paperwork, including my transcripts. I got a call from the superintendent. He said, why don't you come on out, and let's see if we like each other. Let's see if you're going to want to maybe teach here. I said, great, that's awesome. We were ready to put the period on the conversation. I said, oh, excuse me, though, can you please give me the directions to the school so when I reach your community, I'm going to know how to get there? And he said, okay. No, he didn't say that. He paused. He said, Mrs. Brown, if you can't find the school, we don't want to hire you. Okay, I said, and I found a map and found my way up Route 9 a couple days later. There was a sign up the side of the road, Borup, 10 miles. And I looked down across this beautiful, flat Minnesota land, and from 10 miles away, I can see the school, right? It's like inches from the highway. Anyway, I found the school. I got the job. Borup, Minnesota. Population, 128. Major occupations, major way of making a living in this community, of course, agriculture. In the school, K-12, 150 students, K-12. Starting salary, $8,000. But it was mine. It was my job. I was to be the high school English department, grades 9, 10, 11, and 12. And of course, the seniors had to have electives. Okay, so we were teaching those. I was also the librarian. I was qualified to do this because I took two classes in the summer that allowed me to get an emergency certificate so I could do that librarian job in the fall. The library was about maybe a fifth the size of this room. But it was mine, right? It was my library. They also wanted me to direct a play and to help with the speech team. So every day, four teachers and myself got in the car. We drove off to Borup, 40 miles away. Of course, the five of us together comprised over 50% of the entire faculty of the district, right? One day we slid into the ditch. They almost had to cancel school, you know? But the thing of it is, this first year of teaching in Borup, Minnesota, as every thing you can think of, the worst, the best, the most enlightening, the most frightening, it was an incredible year. And these young men and women that I was privileged to teach in Borup taught me many things. And I'd like to share with you three of those things that they taught me. One of the first things I learned is that when a young lady comes to your class smelling like a barn, it's because she's been working in a barn, right? This young woman got up at 4:30 every morning to help on her parents' dairy farm. Now, I don't know what you know about dairy farms. I knew very little about dairy farms, but I do know that they're challenging, difficult places to work. Cows do not take a vacation, and very seldom do dairy farmers and their families either. But she would show up. She was there every day in my classroom, present. I began to realize that a student's presence in my classroom is a gift. And I best not squander that because they work pretty darn hard to get there. Another thing I learned in this school, everyone does everything, right? It's so small, everyone had to. The girls who cheered for the boys' football team were also the girls' basketball team and the girls' volleyball team, right? They had an incredible music program, so people were in band and orchestra and choir. Of course, there were ensemble competitions and all kinds of things. They had a speech team. They had a debate club. Of course, I had to start a drama club. What more did they need, right? I don't know why I didn't realize this sooner for them or for myself. Kids' lives are complicated. Anyone who stands in front of a group of teenagers and doesn't realize the complexities of their lives is doing them a great disservice, right? So I said, oh my God, these kids are meeting themselves, coming and going. What am I going to do? How can I direct a play? How can I help them in class? But I had to be flexible. It's the first thing I learned and developed over the course of my teaching. Yeah, I have to be flexible when I can meet with a student before or after school. I have to be flexible when I'm going to meet with their parents or not. I need to be flexible enough in my rehearsal schedule so that, yeah, I can avoid the first day of hunting season. You have to be flexible. Flexibility matters. It matters to those kids. I also learned that if you're going to direct a play in a community and in a school this size, that it's going to take a lot of work. And, of course, I didn't want to do just any play. I wanted to do My Fair Lady, right? I did. And we did it. But thank you. But of course, I would have to work really, really hard, right? Well, I mean, I did. I directed, I choreographed, I designed the costumes, I bought the fabrics, I played the piano in the pit, played the piano for rehearsals, on and on. I even roped in my husband, Dean. He designed the sets. He built the sets. He built lighting instruments out of coffee cans and PARs. It was a miracle thing. But what I did not realize and failed to acknowledge was the work of the people around me. Literally, hundreds of people in this little town, in this little school, were working just as hard as I was. So when I came down with shingles and mono after the musical closed, right? I learned that to my peril, I must learn to acknowledge and recognize the work of other people. You do not do that kind of work alone. You do education and theater to serve a community. Well, my career turned out to not necessarily be the stuff of television, film, and bestsellers. But it was enough for me. In spite of C's, in spite of feeling ill-prepared, I managed to get a 40-year career out of education through four states and two advanced degrees. I managed to somehow learn and allow my students to teach me that it's not about grades, that it's not about your academic life, it's about your life. A mentor, just through reading, I've never met the man, but Parker Palmer has said, "You teach what you are." And here I am what I have become, a teacher. And I thank God every day for the thousands of students, for the hundreds and hundreds of people who helped me, for relatives and family, past and present, who helped me be a better person, a better human being, and a better teacher. And I hope my dad is proud. Thank you.
Cindy Brown talking about some pivotal moments of learning in life, eye-opening, horizon-shifting, sometimes painful moments of learning during a recent Next to Normal Story Slam produced by Devin Lovell.